You're fighting elves. Not just elves. Is it possible? Have you, a witcher, not heard of the squirrels? No, I haven't. Where have you been these past 2 years? Beyond the seas? Here in Caedwin, the Squirtile have made sure everybody's talking about them. They've seen to it only too well. The first bands appeared just after the war with Nilfgaard broke out. The cursed non-humans took advantage of our difficulties. We were fighting in the south, and they began a guerrilla campaign at our rear. They counted on the Nilfgaardians defeating us, started declaring it was the end of human rule, and there would be a return to the old order. Humans to the sea! That's their battle cry as they murder, burn and plunder. It's your own fault and your own problem, the Greave commented glumly, tapping his thigh with the notched stick, a mark of his position. Yours and all the other noblemen and knights. You're the ones who oppressed the non-humans, would not allow them their way of life. So now you pay for it. Well, we've always moved goods this way and no one stopped us. We didn't need an army.
What's true is true,
said one of the merchants who had been sitting silently on a bench.
The squirrels are no fiercer than the bandits who used to roam these ways. And who did the elves take in hand first? The bandits.
What do I care if it's a bandit or an elf who runs me through with an arrow from behind some bushes?
The toll collector with the bandaged head said suddenly.
The thatch, if it's set on fire above my head in the night, burns just the same. What difference does it make who lit the firebrand? You say, sir, that the Squirtile are no worse than the bandits. You lie. The bandits wanted loot. But the elves are after human blood. Not everyone has ducats, but we all have blood running through our veins. You say it's the nobility's problem, Greave. That's an even greater folly. What about the lumberjacks shot in the clearing, the tar-makers hacked to pieces at the beaches, the refugee peasants from the burned-down hamlets? Did they hurt the non-humans? They lived and worked together as neighbours, and suddenly they got an arrow in the back. And me? Never in my life have I harmed a non-human, and look, my head is broken open by a dwarf's cutlass. And if it were not for the soldiers you're snapping at, I would be lying beneath an ell of turf.
Exactly. The knight in the yellow surcoat thumped his fist against the table once again. We are protecting your mangy skin, Greave, from those, as you call them, oppressed elves, who, according to you, we did not let live. But I will say something different. We have emboldened them too much. We tolerated them, treated them as humans, as equals, and now they are stabbing us in the back. Nilfgaard is paying them for it. I'd stake my life, and the savage elves from the mountains are furnishing them with arms. But their real support comes from those who always lived among us. From the elves, half-elves, dwarves, gnomes and halflings. They are the ones who are hiding them, feeding them, supplying them with volunteers.
Not all of them, said another merchant, slim with a delicate and noble face, in no way a typical merchant's features. The majority of non-humans condemn the squirrels, sir, and want nothing to do with them. The majority of them are loyal, and sometimes pay a high price for that loyalty. Remember the burgomaster from Ban Ard. He was a half-elf who urged peace and cooperation. He was killed by an assassin's arrow, aimed, no doubt, by a neighbour, some halfling or dwarf who also feigned loyalty, scoffed the knight. If you ask me, none of them are loyal. Every one of them. Hey there! Who are you?
Geralt looked around. Ciri stood right behind him, casting her huge emerald eyes over everyone. As far as the ability to move noiselessly was concerned, she had clearly made enormous progress.
She's with me, he explained.
The knight measured Ciri with his eyes, then turned back to the merchant with the noble face, evidently considering him the most serious partner in the discussion.
Yes, sir. Do not talk to me about loyal non-humans. They are all our enemies. It's just that some are better than others at pretending otherwise. Halflings, dwarves, and gnomes have lived amongst us for centuries, in some sort of harmony, it would seem. But it sufficed for the elves to lift their heads, and all the others grabbed their weapons and took to the woods too. I tell you, it was a mistake to tolerate the free elves and dryads with their forests and their mountain enclaves. It wasn't enough for them, and now they're yelling, "It's our world, be gone, strangers!" By the gods, we'll show them who will be gone, and of which race even the slightest traces will be wiped away. We beat the hides off the Nilfgaardians, and now we will do something about these rogue bands.
It's not easy to catch an elf in the woods, said the Witcher. Nor would I go after a gnome or dwarf in the mountains. How large are these units?
Bands, corrected the knight. They're bands, Witcher. They can count up to 100 heads, sometimes more. They call each pack a commando. It's a word borrowed from the gnomes, and in saying they're hard to catch, you speak truly. Evidently you are a professional.
Chasing them through the woods and thickets is senseless. The only way is to cut them off from their supplies, isolate them, starve them out. Seize the non-humans who are helping them firmly by the scruff of their necks. Those from the towns and settlements, villages and farms. The problem is, said the merchant with noble features, that we still don't know which of the non-humans are helping them and which aren't. Then we have to seize them all.
Ah, the merchant smiled. I understand. I've heard that somewhere before. Take everyone by the scruff of their neck and throw them down the mines, into enclosed camps, into quarries. Everyone. The innocent, too. Women and children. Is that right?
The knight raised his head and slammed his hand down on his sword hilt.
Just so, and no other way, he said sharply.
You pity the children, yet you're like a child yourself in this world, dear sir. A truce with Nilfgaard is a very fragile thing, like an eggshell. If not today, then the war might start anew tomorrow, and anything can happen in war. If they defeated us, what do you think would happen? I'll tell you what. Elven commandos would emerge from the forests, they'd emerge strong and numerous, and these loyal elements would instantly join them. Those loyal dwarves of yours, your friendly halflings, do you think they're going to talk of peace, of reconciliation then? No, sir. They'll be tearing our guts out. Nilfgaard is going to deal with us through their hands, and they'll drown us in the sea just as they promise. No, sir. We must not pussyfoot around them. It's either them or us. There's no third way.
The door of the hut squeaked, and a soldier in a bloodied apron stood in the doorway.
"Forgive me for disturbing you," he hawked. "Which of you noble sirs be the one who brought this sick woman here?"
"I did," said the witcher. "What's happened?
Come with me, please."
They went out into the courtyard.
"It bodes not well with her, sir," said the soldier, indicating Triss. "Firewort with petter and saltpeter I gave her, but it be no good. I don't really."
Geralt made no comment, because there was nothing to say. The magician, doubled over, was clear evidence of the fact that firewater with pepper and saltpeter was not something her stomach could tolerate.
"It could be some plague,"
the soldier frowned.
"Or that, what's it called? Zintery. If it were to spread to our men." "She is a wizard," protected the witcher. "Wizards don't fall sick."
"Just so," the knight who had followed them out threw in cynically. "Yours, as I see, is just emanating good health. Geralt, listen to me. The woman needs help, and we cannot offer such. Nor can I risk an epidemic amongst my troops. You understand?"
"I understand. I will leave immediately. I have no choice. I have to turn back towards Daven or Ardkarrig."
"You won't get far. The patrols have orders to stop everyone. Besides, it is dangerous. The Skoytail have gone in exactly that direction."
"I'll manage."
"From what I've heard about you," the knight's lips twisted, "I have no doubt you would. But bear in mind you are not alone. You have a gravely sick woman on your shoulders, and this brat..."
Ciri, who was trying to clean her dung-smeared boots on a ladder rung, raised her head. The knight cleared his throat and looked down. Geralt smiled faintly. Over the last 2 years, Ciri had almost forgotten her origins, and had almost entirely lost her royal manners and airs, but her glare, which she wanted, was very much like that of her grandmother. So much so that Queen Calanthe would no doubt have been very proud of her granddaughter.
"Yes. What was I?" the knight stammered, tugging at his belt with embarrassment.
"Geralt, sir, I know what you need to do. Cross beyond the river, south. You will catch up with a caravan which is following the trail. Night is just around the corner, and the caravan is certain to stop for a rest. You will reach it by dawn."
"What kind of caravan?"
"I don't know." The knight shrugged. "But it is not a merchant or an ordinary convoy. It's too orderly. The wagons are all the same, all covered. A royal bailiff's, no doubt. I allowed them to cross the bridge because they are following the trail south, probably towards the fords on the Lixella."
The witcher considered this, looking at Triss.
"That would be on my way. But will I find help there?"
"Maybe yes," the knight said coldly. "Maybe no. But you won't find it here, that's for sure."
They did not hear or see him as he approached, engrossed as they were in conversation, sitting around a campfire which, with its yellow light, cadaverously illuminated the canvas of the wagons arranged in a circle. Geralt gently pulled up his mare and forced her to neigh loudly. He wanted to warn the caravan, which had set up camp for the night, wanted to temper the surprise of having visitors and avoid a nervous reaction. He knew from experience that the release mechanisms on crossbows did not like nervous moves. The campers leapt up, and, despite his warning, performed numerous agitated movements. Most of them, he saw at once, were dwarfs. This reassured him somewhat. Dwarves, although extremely irascible, usually asked questions first in situations such as these, and only then aimed their crossbows.
"Who's that?"
shouted one of the dwarves hoarsely, and with a swift, energetic move, prized an axe from a stump by the campfire.
"Who goes there?"
"A friend."
The witcher dismounted.
"I wonder whose," growled the dwarf. "Come closer. Hold your hands out so we can see them."
Geralt approached, holding his hands out so they could be seen, even by someone afflicted with conjunctivitis or night blindness.
"Closer."
He obeyed. The dwarf lowered his axe and tilted his head a little.
"Either my eyes deceive me," he said, "or it's the witcher Geralt of Rivia, or someone who looks damn like him."
The fire suddenly shot up into flames, bursting into a golden brightness, which drew faces and figures from the dark.
"Yarpen Zigrin," declared Geralt, astonished. "None other than Yarpen Zigrin in person, complete with beard."
"Ha!"
The dwarf waved his axe as if it were an osier twig. The blade whirred in the air and cut into a stump with a dull thud.
"Call the alarm off, this truly is a friend."
The rest of the gathering visibly relaxed, and Geralt thought he heard deep sighs of relief. The dwarf walked up to him, holding out his hand. His grip could easily rival a pair of iron pincers.
"Welcome, you warlock," he said. "Wherever you've come from and wherever you're going, welcome. Boys, over here. You remember my boys, witcher? This is Yannick Brass, this one's Xavier Moran, and here's Pauly Dahlberg and his brother Regan."
Geralt didn't remember any of them. And besides, they all looked alike, bearded, stocky, practically square in their thick quilted jerkins.
"There were six of you."
One by one, he squeezed the hard, gnarled hands offered him, if I remember correctly.
"You've got a good memory," laughed Yarpen Zigrin. "There were six of us, indeed. But Lucas Corto got married, settled down in Mahakam, and dropped out of the company, the stupid oaf. Somehow we haven't managed to find anybody worthy of his place yet. Pity. Sex is just right. Not too many, not too few. To eat a calf, knock back a barrel, there's nothing like six. As I say."
With a nod, Geralt indicated the rest of the group, standing undecided by the wagons.
"There are enough of you here to manage three calves, not to mention a quantity of poultry. What's this gang of fellows you're commanding, Yarpen?" "I'm not the one in command. Allow me to introduce you. Forgive me, Venk, for not doing so straight away, but me and my boys have known Geralt of Rivia for a long time. We've a fair number of shared memories behind us. Geralt, this is Commissar Wilfred Venk, in the service of King Henselt of Ard Carrick, the merciful ruler of Caidwen."
Wilfred Venk was tall, taller than Geralt, and near twice the dwarf's height. He wore an ordinary, simple outfit like that worn by greaves, bailiffs, or mounted messengers. But there was a sharpness in his movements, a stiffness and sureness which the witcher knew and could faultlessly recognize, even at night, even in the meagre light of the campfire. That was how men, accustomed to wearing hauberks and belts weighed down with weapons, moved. Venk was a professional soldier. Geralt was prepared to wager any sum on it. He shook the proffered hand and gave a little bow.
"Let's sit down."
Yarpen indicated the stump where his mighty axe was still embedded.
"Tell us what you're doing in this neighbourhood, Geralt."
"Looking for help. I'm journeying in a threesome with a woman and youngster. The woman is sick. Seriously sick. I caught up with you to ask for help. Damn it, we don't have a medic here."
The dwarf spat at the flaming logs.
"Where have you left them?" "Half a furlong from here by the roadside." "You lead the way. Hey, you there. Three to the horses, saddle the spare mounts." "Geralt, will your sick woman hold up in the saddle?" "Not really. That's why I had to leave her there."
"Get the sheepskin, canvas sheet and two poles from the wagon. Quick!"
Wilfred Venk, crossing his arms, hawked loudly.
"We're on the trail," Yarpen Zigrin said sharply, without looking at him. "You don't refuse help on the trail." "Damn it."
Yarpen removed his palm from Triss's forehead.
"She's as hot as a furnace. I don't like it. What if it's typhoid or dysentery?"
"It can't be typhoid or dysentery,"
Geralt lied with conviction, wrapping the horse blankets around the sick woman.
"Wizards are immune to those diseases. It's food poisoning, nothing contagious."
Well, all right. I'll rummage through the bags. I used to have some good medicine for the runs. Maybe there's still a little left."
Ciri, muttered the witcher, passing her a sheepskin unstrapped from the horse. Go to sleep. You're barely on your feet. No, not in the wagon. We'll put Triss in the wagon. You lie down next to the fire.
No, she protested quietly, watching the dwarf walk away. I'm going to lie down next to her. When they see you keeping me away from her, they won't believe you. They'll think it's contagious and chase us away, like the soldiers in the fort.
Geralt,
the enchantress moaned suddenly.
Where are we?
Amongst friends.
I'm here, said Ciri, stroking her chestnut hair. I'm at your side. Don't be afraid. You feel how warm it is here. A campfire's burning, and a dwarf is just going to bring some medicine for your stomach.
Geralt,
sobbed Triss, trying to disentangle herself from the blankets.
No, no magic elixirs, remember?
I remember. Lie peacefully.
I've got to... Oh!
The witcher leaned over without a word, picked up the enchantress, together with her cocoon of caparisons and blankets, and marched to the woods into the darkness. Ciri sighed. She turned, hearing heavy panting. Behind the wagon appeared the dwarf, hefting a considerable bundle under his arm. The campfire flame gleamed on the blade of the axe behind his belt. The rivets on his heavy leather jerkin also glistened.
"Where's the sick one?" he snarled. "Flown away on a broomstick?"
Ciri pointed to the darkness.
"Right."
The dwarf nodded. "I know the pain, and I've known the same nasty complaint. When I was younger, I used to eat everything I managed to find or catch or cut down, so I got food poisoning many a time. Who is she, this enchantress?"
"Triss Merigold."
"I don't know her. Never heard of her. I rarely have anything to do with the Brotherhood anyway. Well, but it's polite to introduce oneself. I'm called Yappin Zigrin, and what are you called, little goose?"
"Something other than little goose,"
snarled Ciri with a gleam in her eyes. The dwarf chuckled and bared his teeth.
"Ah!" He bowed with exaggeration. "I beg your forgiveness. I didn't recognize you in the darkness. This isn't a goose, but a noble young lady. I fall at your feet. What is the young lady's name, if it's no secret?"
"It's no secret. I'm Ciri."
"Ciri? Aha! And who is the young lady?"
"That,"
Ciri turned her nose up proudly,
"is a secret."
Yarpin snorted again.
"The young lady's little tongue is as sharp as a wasp. If the young lady will deign to forgive me, I brought the medicine and a little food. Will the young lady accept it, or will she send the old boor Yarpin Zigrin away?"
"I'm sorry."
Ciri had second thoughts and lowered her head.
"Triss really does need help, Master Zigrin. She's very sick. Thank you for the medicine."
"It's nothing."
The dwarf bared his teeth again and patted her shoulder amicably.
"Come on, Ciri, you help me. The medicine has to be prepared. We'll roll some pellets according to my grandmother's recipe. No disease sitting in the guts will resist these kernels."
He unwrapped the bundle, extracted something shaped like a piece of turf and a small clay vessel. Ciri approached, curious.
"You should know, Ciri," said Yarpin, "that my grandmother knew her medicine like nobody's business. Unfortunately, she believed that the source of most disease is idleness, and idleness is best cured through the application of a stick. As far as my siblings and I were concerned, she chiefly used this cure preventatively. She beat us for anything and for nothing. She was a rare old hag, and once, when out of the blue she gave me a chunk of bread with dripping and sugar, it was such a surprise that I dropped it in astonishment, dripping down. So, my gran gave me a thrashing, the nasty old bitch, and then she gave me another chunk of bread, only without the sugar."
"My grandmother,"
Ciri nodded in understanding,
"thrashed me once too, with a switch."
"A switch?" The dwarf laughed. "Mine whacked me once with a pickaxe handle. But that's enough reminiscing. We have to roll the pellets. Here, tear this up and mould it into little balls."
"What is it? It's sticky and messy. Ugh, what a stink."
"It's mouldy oil meal bread. Excellent medicine. Roll it into little balls. Smaller, smaller than for a magician or a cow. Give me one. Good. Now, we're going to roll the ball in medicine."
"Ugh!
Stinks?"
The dwarf brought his upturned nose closer to the clay pot.
"Impossible. Crushed garlic and bitter salt has no right to stink, even if it's 100 years old.
"It's foul. Ugh! Triss won't eat that."
"We'll use my grandmother's method. You squeeze her nose and I'll shove the pellets in." "Yarpin,"
Geralt hissed, emerging abruptly from the darkness with a magician in his arms.
Watch out, or I'll shove something down you.
It's medicine.
The dwarf took offence.
It helps. Mould, garlic.
Yes,
moaned Triss weakly from the depths of her cocoon.
It's true. Geralt, it really ought to help.
See?
Yarpin nudged Geralt with his elbow, turning his beard up proudly and pointing to Triss, who swallowed the pellets with a martyred expression.
A wise magician knows what's good for her.
What are you saying, Triss?
The witcher leaned over.
Ah, I see. Yarpin, do you have any angelica or saffron? I'll have a look and ask around. I brought you some water and little food.
Thank you, but they both need rest above all. Ciri, lie down.
I'll just pick up a compress for Triss.
I'll do it myself. Yarpin, I'd like to talk to you.
Come to the fire. We'll broach a barrel.
I want to talk to you. I don't need an audience, quite the contrary.
Of course. I'm listening.
What sort of convoy is this?
The dwarf raised his small, piercing eyes at him.
The king's service, he said slowly and emphatically.
That's what I thought.
The witcher held the gaze. Yarpin, I'm not asking out of any inappropriate curiosity.
I know, and I also know what you mean. But this convoy is... special.
So, what are you transporting?
Salt fish, said Yarpin casually, and proceeded to embellish his lie without batting an eyelid.
Fodder, tools, harnesses, various odds and ends for the army. Venk is a quartermaster to the king's army.
If he's a quartermaster, then I'm a druid, smiled Geralt. But that's your affair. I'm not in the habit of poking my nose into other people's secrets, but you can see the state Triss is in. Let us join you, Yarpin. Let us put her in one of the wagons, just for a few days.
I'm not asking where you're going, because this trail goes straight to the south without forking until past the Lixella, and it's a 10-day journey to the Lixella. By that time, the fever will have subsided, and Triss will be able to ride a horse. And even if she isn't, then I'll stop in a town beyond the river. 10 days in a wagon, well covered, hot food. Please.
I don't give the orders here, Venk does.
I don't believe you lack influence over him, not in a convoy primarily made up of dwarves. Of course he has to bear you in mind.
Who is this Triss to you?
What difference does it make in this situation?
In this situation, none. I asked out of an inappropriate curiosity, born of the desire to start new rumours going around the inns. But, be that as it may, you're mighty attracted to this enchantress, Geralt.
The witcher smiled sadly. And the girl? Yarpin indicated Ciri with his head as she wriggled under the sheepskin.
Yours?
Mine, he replied without thinking. Mine, Sigrid.
The dawn was grey, wet, and smelled of night rain and morning mist. Ciri felt she had slept no more than a few minutes, as though she had been woken up the very minute she lay her head down on the sacks heaped on the wagon. Geralt was just settling Triss down next to her, having brought her in from another enforced expedition into the woods. The rugs cocooning the enchantress sparkled with dew. Geralt had dark circles under his eyes. Ciri knew he had not closed them for an instant. Triss had run a fever through the night and suffered greatly.
Did I wake you? Sorry. Sleep, Ciri. It's still early.
What's happening with Triss? How is she?
Better,
moaned the magician.
Better, but listen, Geralt. I'd like to...
Yes?
The witcher leaned over, but Triss was already asleep. He straightened himself, stretched.
Geralt,
whispered Ciri,
are they going to let us travel on the wagon?
We'll see.
He bit his lip.
Sleep while you can. Rest.
He jumped down off the wagon. Ciri heard the sound of the camp packing up. Horses stamping, harnesses ringing, poles squeaking, swingle trees grating, and talking and cursing. And then, nearby, Yarpin Zigrin's hoarse voice, and the calm voice of the tall man called Venk, and the cold voice of Geralt. She raised herself and carefully peered out from behind the canvas.
I have no categorical interdictions on this matter, declared Venk.
Excellent!
The dwarf brightened.
So, the matter settled.
The commissar raised his hand a little, indicating that he had not yet finished. He was silent for a while, and Geralt and Yarpin waited patiently.
Nevertheless, Venk said finally, when it comes to the safe arrival of this caravan, It's my head on the line. Again, he said nothing. This time, no one interrupted. There was no question about it. One had to get used to long intervals between sentences when speaking to the commissar. For its safe arrival, he continued after a moment, and for its timely arrival. Caring for this sick woman might slow down the march. We're ahead of schedule on the route, Yarfin assured him after a significant pause. We're ahead of time, thanks, sir. We won't miss the deadline, and as for safety, I don't think the Witcher's company will harm that. The trail leads through the woods right up to the Lixela, and to the right and left there's a wild forest, and rumour has it all sorts of evil creatures roam the forest. Indeed, the commissar agreed, looking the Witcher straight in the eye. He seemed to be weighing out every single word. One can come across certain evil creatures in Caedwin forests, lately incited by other evil creatures. They could jeopardize our safety. King Henselt, knowing this, empowered me to recruit volunteers to join our armed escort. Geralt, that would solve your problem. The witch's silence lasted a long while, longer than Venk's entire speech, interspersed though it had been with regular pauses. No, he said finally. No, Venk. Let us put this clearly. I am prepared to repay the help given Lady Marigold, but not in this manner. I can groom the horses, carry water and firewood, even cook. But I will not enter the king's service as a soldier. Please don't count on my sword. I have no intention of killing those, as you call them, evil creatures, on the order of other creatures whom I do not consider to be any better. Ciri heard Yarp and Zigrin hiss loudly and cough into his rolled-up sleeve. Venk stared at the Witcher calmly. I see, he stated dryly. I like clear situations. All right, then. Zigrin, see to it that the speed of our progress does not slow. As for you, Geralt, I know you will prove to be useful and helpful in a way you deem fit. It would be an affront to both of us if I were to treat your good stead as payment for aid offered to a suffering woman. Is she feeling better today? The Witcher gave a nod, which seemed to Ciri to be somewhat deeper and politer than usual. Venk's expression did not change. That pleases me, he said after a normal pause. In taking Lady Marigold aboard a wagon in my convoy, I take on the responsibility for her health, comfort, and safety. Zigrin, give the command to march out. Venk. Yes, Geralt. Thank you. The commissar bowed his head, a bit more deeply and politely, it seemed to Ciri, than the usual perfunctory politeness required. Yarp and Zigrin ran the length of the column, giving orders and instructions loudly, after which he clambered onto the coachman's box, shouted and whipped the horses with the reins. The wagon jolted and rattled along the forest trail. The bump woke Triss up, but Ciri reassured her and changed the compress on her forehead. The rattling had a soporific effect, and the magician was soon asleep. Ciri, too, fell to dozing. When she woke, the sun was already high. She peered out between the barrels and packages. The wagon she was in was at the vanguard of the convoy. The one following them was being driven by a dwarf with a red kerchief tied around his neck. From conversations between the dwarves, she had gathered that his name was Pauli Dahlberg. Next to him sat his brother, Regan. She also saw Venk riding a horse in the company of two bailiffs. Roach, Geralt's mare, tethered to the wagon, greeted her with a quiet neigh. She couldn't see her chestnut anywhere or Triss's dun. No doubt they were at the rear with the convoy's spare horses. Geralt was sitting on the coachman's box next to Yarpin. They were talking quietly, drinking beer from a barrel perched between them. Ciri pricked up her ears, but soon grew bored. The discussion concerned politics, and was mainly about King Henselt's intentions and plans, and some special service or missions to do with secretly aiding his neighbour, King Demavend of Adian, who was being threatened by war. Geralt expressed interest about how five wagons of salted fish could help Adian's defence. Yarpin
ignoring the jibe in Geralt's voice, explained that some species of fish were so valuable that a few wagon loads would suffice to pay an armoured company for a year, and each new armoured company was a considerable help. Geralt was surprised that the aid had to be quite so secretive, to which the dwarf replied that was why the secret was a secret. Triss tossed in her sleep, shook the compress off, and talked indistinctly to herself. She demanded that someone called Kevin kept his hands to himself, and immediately after that declared that destiny cannot be avoided. Finally, having stated that everyone, absolutely everyone, is a mutant to a certain degree, she fell into a peaceful sleep. Ciri also felt sleepy, but was brought to her senses by Yarpin's chuckle, as he reminded Geralt of their past adventures. This one concerned a hunt for a golden dragon, who instead of allowing itself to be hunted down, had counted the hunter's bones and then eaten a cobbler called Goat Muncher. Ciri began to listen with greater interest. Geralt asked about what had happened to the slashers, but Yarpin didn't know. Yarpin, in turn, was curious about a woman called Yennefer, at which Geralt grew oddly uncommunicative. The dwarf drank more beer and started to complain that Yennefer still bore him a grudge, although a good few years had gone by since those days. "I came across her at the market in Gore's Velen," he recounted. "She barely noticed me. She spat like a she-cat and insulted my deceased mother horribly. I fled for all I was worth, but she shouted after me that she'd catch up with me one day and make grass grow out of my ass." Ciri giggled, imagining Yarpin with the grass. Geralt grunted something about women and their impulsive natures, which the dwarf considered far too mild a description for maliciousness, obstinacy, and vindictiveness. Geralt did not take up the subject, and Ciri fell into dozing once more. This time, she was woken by raised voices. Yarpin's voice, to be exact. He was yelling, "Oh, yes, so you know. That's what I've decided." "Quieter," said the Witcher calmly. "There's a sick woman in the wagon. Understand, I'm not criticizing your decisions or your resolutions." "No, of course not," the dwarf interrupted sarcastically. "You're just smiling knowingly about them." "Yarpin, I'm warning you, as one friend to another. Both sides despise those who sit on the fence, or at best, they treat them with suspicion. I'm not sitting. I'm unambiguously declaring myself to be on one side. But you'll always remain a dwarf for that side, someone who's different, an outsider, while for the other side..." He broke off. "Well," growled Yarpin, turning away. "Well, go on. What are you waiting for? Call me a traitor and a dog on a human leash who for a handful of silver and a bowl of lousy food is prepared to be set against his rebelling kinsmen who are fighting for freedom. Well, go on, spit it out. I don't like insinuations." "No, Yarpin," said Geralt quietly. "No, I'm not going to spit anything out." "Ah, you're not." The dwarf whipped the horses. "You don't feel like it. You prefer to stare and smile. Not a word to me, eh? But you could say it to Venk. Please don't count on my sword. Oh, so haughtily, nobly, and proudly said. Shove your haughtiness up a dog's ass, and your bloody pride with it." "I just wanted to be honest. I don't want to get mixed up in this conflict. I want to remain neutral." "It's impossible," yelled Yarpin. "It's impossible to remain neutral. Don't you understand that?" "No, you don't understand anything. Oh, get off my wagon, and get on your horse, and get out of my sight with your arrogant neutrality. You get on my nerves." Geralt turned away. Ciri held her breath in anticipation, but the Witcher didn't say a word. He stood and jumped from the wagon, swiftly, softly, and nimbly. Yarpin waited for him to untether his mare from the ladder, then whipped his horses once again, growling something incomprehensible, sounding terrifying under his breath. She stood up to jump down too and find her chestnut. The dwarf turned and measured her with a reluctant eye. "Then you're just a nuisance too, little madam," he snorted angrily. "All we need are ladies and girls, damn it. I can't even take a piss from the box. I have to stop the cart and go into the bushes." Ciri put her hands on her hips, shook her ashen fringe, and turned up her nose. "Is that so?" she shrilled, enraged. "Drink less beer, Zigrin, and then you won't have to." "My beer's none of your shitting business, you chit." "Don't yell. Triss has just fallen asleep." "It's my wagon. I'll yell if I want to." "Stumpy, watch. You impertinent brat! Stump! I'll show you, Stump! Oh, damn it! Brrrp!" The dwarf leaned far back, pulling at the reins at the very last moment, just as the two horses were on the point of stepping over a log blocking their way. Yarpin stood up in the box, and swearing in both human and dwarvish, whistling and roaring, brought the cart to a halt. Dwarves and humans alike, leaping from their wagons, ran up and helped lead the horses to the clear path, tugging them on by their halters and harnesses.
"Dozing off here, Yarpin,"
growled Pauly Dalberg as he approached.
"Bloody hell! If you'd ridden over the axle, we'd be done for, and the wheels shattered as well. Damn it! What were you—"
"Piss off, Pauly!" roared Yarpin Zigrin, and furiously lashed the horse's hindquarters with the reins.
"You were lucky,"
said Ciri, ever so sweetly, squeezing onto the box next to the dwarf.
"As you can see, it's better to have a witcher girl on your wagon than to travel alone. I warned you just in time.
But if you'd been in the middle of pissing from the box and ridden onto that log, well, well, it's scary to think what might have happened."
"Are you going to be quiet?"
"I'm not saying any more. Not a word."
She lasted less than a minute.
"Zigrin, sir."
"I'm not a sir."
The dwarf nudged her with his elbow and bared his teeth.
"And Yarpin, is that clear? We'll lead the horses together, right?"
"Right. Can I hold the reins?"
"If you must." "Wait, not like that. Pass them over your index finger and hold them down with your thumb like this. The same with the left. Don't tug them. Don't pull too hard."
"Is that right?"
"Right."
"Yarpin?"
"Hmm?"
"What does it mean, remain neutral?"
"To be indifferent," he muttered reluctantly. "Don't let the reins hang down. Pull the left one closer to yourself."
"What's indifferent? Indifferent to what?"
The dwarf leaned far out and spat under the wagon.
"If the Squire Tail attack us, your Geralt intends to stand by and look calmly on as they cut our throats. You'll probably stand next to him because it'll be a demonstration class. Today's subject, the witcher's behaviour in face of conflict between intelligent races."
"I don't understand."
"That doesn't surprise me in the least."
"Is that why you quarrelled with him and were angry? Who are these Squire Tile, anyway? These squirrels?"
"Ciri." Yarpin tussled his beard violently. "These aren't matters for the minds of little girls."
"Uh-huh. Now you're angry at me. I'm not little at all. I heard what the soldiers in the fort said about the squirrels. I saw two dead elves. And the knight said they also kill. And it's not just elves amongst them. There are dwarves too."
"I know," said Yarpin sourly.
"And you're a dwarf?"
"There's no doubt about that."
"So why are you afraid of the squirrels? It seems they only fight humans."
"It's not so simple as that."
He grew solemn. "Unfortunately." Ciri stayed silent for a long time, biting her lower lip and wrinkling her nose.
"Now I know," she said suddenly. "The squirrels are fighting for freedom. And although you're a dwarf, you're King Hensel's special secret servant on a human leash."
Yarpin snorted, wiped his nose on his sleeve, and leaned out of the box to check that Venk had not ridden up too close. But the commissar was far away, engaged in conversation with Geralt.
"You've got pretty good hearing, girl, like a marmot."
He grinned broadly. "You're also a bit too bright for someone destined to give birth, cook and spin.
You think you know everything, don't you? That's because you're a brat. Don't pull silly faces. Faces like that don't make you look any older, just uglier than usual. You've grasped the nature of the Squire Tiles quickly. You liked the slogans. You know why you understand them so well? Because the Squire Tiles are brats too. They're little snotheads who don't understand that they're being egged on, that someone's taking advantage of their childish stupidity by feeding them slogans about freedom."
"But they really are fighting for freedom."
Ciri raised her head and gazed at the dwarf with wide-open green eyes.
"Like the dryads in the Brokilon Woods. They kill people because some people are harming them. Because this used to be your country. The dwarves and the elves and those halflings, gnomes and other... And now there are people here, so the elves..."
"Elves," snorted Yarpin. "They, to be accurate, happen to be strangers just as much as you humans, although they arrived in their white ships a good 1,000 years before you. Now they're competing with each other to offer us friendship. Suddenly we're all brothers. Now they're grinning and saying, 'We kinsmen, we the elder races.' But before..." "Before their arrows used to whistle past our ears when we..."
"So the first on Earth were dwarves?"
"Gnomes, to be honest, as far as this part of the world is concerned, because the world is unimaginably huge, Ciri."
"I know. I saw a map."
"You couldn't have. No one's drawn a map like that, and I doubt they will in the near future. No one knows what exists beyond the mountains of fire and the great sea, even elves, although they claim they know everything. They know shit all, I tell you.
But now, there are far more people than there are you.
Because you multiply like rabbits. The dwarf ground his teeth. You'd do nothing but screw day in, day out, without discrimination, with just anyone and anywhere. And it's enough for your women to just sit on a man's trousers and it makes their bellies swell. Why have you gone so red, crimson as a poppy? You wanted to know, didn't you? So you've got the honest truth and faithful history of a world where he who shatters the skulls of others most efficiently and swells women's bellies fastest reigns. And it's just as hard to compete with you people in murdering as it is in screwing. Yarpin, said Geralt coldly, riding up on Roach. Restrain yourself a little, if you please, with your choice of words. And Ciri, stop playing at being a coachman and have a care for Triss. Check if she's awake and needs anything.
I've been awake for a long time,
the magician said weakly from the depths of the wagon.
But I didn't want to interrupt this interesting conversation. Don't disturb them, Geralt. I'd like to learn more about the role of screwing in the evolution of society. Can I heat some water? Triss wants to wash.
Go ahead, agreed Yarpin Zigrin. Xavier, take the spit off the fire. Our hare's had enough. Hand me the cauldron, Ciri. Oh, look at you, it's full to the brim. Did you lug this great wit on the stream by yourself?
I'm strong.
The elder of the Dahlberg brothers burst out laughing.
Don't judge her by appearances, Polly, said Yarpin seriously, as he skillfully divided the roast grey hare into portions. There's nothing to laugh at here. She's skinny, but I can see she's a robust and resilient lass. She's like a leather belt, thin, but it can't be torn apart in your hands. And if you were to hang yourself on it, it would bear your weight, too.
No one laughed. Ciri squatted next to the dwarves, sprawled around the fire. This time, Yarpin Zigrin and his four boys had lit their own fire at the camp, because they did not intend to share the hare which Xavier Moran had shot. For them alone, there was just enough for one, at most two mouthfuls each.
Add some wood to the fire, said Yarpin, licking his fingers. The water will eat quicker.
That water's a stupid idea, stated Regan Dahlberg, spitting out a bone. Washing can only harm you when you're sick. When you're healthy, too, come to that. You remember old Schrader? His wife once told him to wash, and Schrader went and died soon afterwards.
Because a rabid dog bit him.
If he hadn't washed, the dog wouldn't have bitten him.
I think, said Ciri,
checking the temperature of the water in the cauldron with her finger.
It's excessive to wash every day, too. But Triss asked for it. She even started crying once, so Geralt and I...
We know, the elder Dahlberg nodded, but that a witcher should. I'm constantly amazed. Hey, Zigrin, if you had a woman, would you wash her and comb her hair? Would you carry her into the bushes if she had to...
Shut up, Polly!
Yarpin cut him short.
Don't say anything against that witcher, because he's a good fellow.
Am I seeing anything? I'm only surprised. Triss, Ciri buttered in cheekily, is not his woman.
I'm all the more surprised. You're all the more a blockhead, you mean, Yarpin summed up. Ciri, pour a bit of water into boil. We'll infuse some more saffron and poppy seeds for the magician. She felt better today, eh?
Probably did, murmured Yannick Brass. We only had to stop the convoy 6 times for her. I know we wouldn't do to deny aid on the trail, and he's a prick who thinks otherwise. And he who denies it would be an arch prick and base son of a bitch. But we've been in these woods too long. Far too long, I tell you. We're tempting fate, damn it. We're tempting fate too much, boys. It's not safe here. The Scoia Tile. Spit that word out, Yannick. Ptoo, Yarpin. Fighting doesn't frighten me, and a bit of blood's nothing new. But if it comes to fighting our own... Damn it. Why did this happen to us? This friggin' lord ought to be transported by 100 friggin' cavalrymen, not us. The devil take those no-worlds from Ard Carach. May they shut up, I said, and pass me the pot of kasha. The hare was a snack, damn it. Now we have to eat something. Ciri, will you eat with us?
Of course.
For a long while, all that could be heard was the smacking of lips, munching, and the crunch of wooden spoons hitting the pot.
Pork's on it,
said Polly Dahlberg, and gave a long burp.
I could still eat some more.
Me too,
declared Ciri, and burped too, delighted by the dwarves' unpretentious manners.
As long as it's not kasha, said Xavier Moran. I can't stomach those mildewts any more. I've gone off salted meat, too.
So gorge yourself on grass, you've got such delicate taste buds. Or rip the bark off the birch with your teeth. Beavers do it and survive.
A beaver? Now that's something I could eat.
As for me, a fish.
Pauly lost himself in dreams as he crunched on a husk pulled from his beard.
I've a fancy for a fish, I can tell you. So, let's catch some fish.
Whoa, growled Yannick Brass. In the bushes?
In the stream?
Some stream? You can piss to the other side. What sort of fish could be in there?
There are fish.
Ciri licked her spoon clean and slipped it into the top of her boot.
I saw them when I went to get the water. But they're sick or something, those fish. They've got a rash. Black and red spots.
Trout!
Roared Pauly, spitting crumbs of husk.
Well, boys, to the stream double quick. Regan, get your britches down. We'll turn them into a fishing trap. Why mine? Pull them off at the double, or I'll wallop you, snothead. Didn't Mother say you ought to listen to me?
Hurry up if you want to go fishing, because dusk is just round the corner, said Yarpin.
Ciri, is the water hot yet?
Leave it, leave it. You'll burn yourself and get dirty from the cauldron. I know you're strong, but let me. I'll carry it.
Geralt was already waiting for them. They could see his white hair through the gap in the canvas, covering the wagon from afar. The dwarf poured the water into the bucket.
Need any help, Witcher?
No, thank you, Yarpin.
Ciri will help. Triss was no longer running a high temperature, but she was extremely weak. Geralt and Ciri were, by now, efficient at undressing and washing her. They had also learned to temper her ambitious, but, at present, unrealistic attempts to manage on her own. They coped exceptionally well. He supported the enchantress in his arms. Ciri washed and dried her. Only one thing had started to surprise and annoy Ciri. Triss, in her opinion, snuggled up to Geralt too tightly. This time she was even trying to kiss him. Geralt indicated the magician's saddlebags with his head. Ciri understood immediately because this too was part of the ritual. Triss always demanded to have her hair combed. She found the comb and knelt down beside her. Triss, lowering her head towards her, put her arms around the Witcher, in Ciri's opinion, definitely a little too tightly.
"Oh, Geralt," she sobbed. I so regret that what was between us...
Triss, please.
It should have happened. Now, when I'm better, it would be entirely different. I could even...
Triss.
I envy Yennefer. I envy her you.
Ciri, step out.
But
go, please.
She jumped out of the wagon and straight into Yarpin, who was waiting, leaning against a wheel and pensively chewing a blade of grass. The dwarf put his arm around her. He did not need to lean over her in order to do so, as Geralt did. He was no taller than her.
Never make the same mistake, little witcher girl, he murmured, indicating the wagon with his eyes. If someone shows you compassion, sympathy and dedication, if they surprise you with integrity of character, value it, but don't mistake it for... something else.
It's not nice to eavesdrop.
I know, and it's dangerous. I only just managed to jump aside when you threw out the suds from the bucket. Come on, let's go and see how many trout have jumped into Regan's breeches.
Yarpin?
Hmm?
I like you.
And I like you, kid.
But you're a dwarf, and I'm not.
And what if... the square tile. You're thinking about the squirrels, aren't you? It's not giving you any peace, is it?
Ciri freed herself from his heavy arm.
Nor you, she said. Nor any of the others. I can plainly see that.
The dwarf said nothing.
Yarpin?
Yes?
Who's right? The squirrels or you? Geralt wants to be neutral. You serve King Henselt, even though you're a dwarf. And the knight in the fort shouted that everybody's our enemy, and that everybody's got to be... everyone. Even the children. Why, Yarpin? Who's right?
I don't know, said the dwarf with some effort. I'm not omniscient. I'm doing what I think right. The squirrels have taken up their weapons and gone into the woods. Humans to the sea, they're shouting, not realizing that their catchy slogan was fed them by Nilfgaardian emissaries. Not understanding that the slogan is not aimed at them, but plainly at humans,
that it's meant to ignite human hatred, not fire young elves to battle. I understood. That's why I consider the Skoyatire's actions criminally stupid. What to do? Maybe in a few years' time I'll be called a traitor who sold out and they'll be heroes. Our history, the history of our world, has seen events turn out like that.
He fell silent, ruffled his beard. Ciri also remained silent.
Elirena, he muttered suddenly. If Elirena was a hero, if what she did is heroism, then that's just too bad. Let them call me a traitor and a coward, because I, Yapin Zigrin, coward, traitor and renegade, state that we should not kill each other. I state that we ought to live, live in such a way that we don't later have to ask anyone for forgiveness. The heroic Elirena, she had to ask. Forgive me, she begged, forgive me. To hell with that. It's better to die than to live in the knowledge that you've done something that needs forgiveness.
Again he fell quiet. Ciri did not ask the questions pressing to her lips. She instinctively felt she should not.
We have to live next to each other, Yapin continued. We and you humans, because we simply don't have any other option. We've known this for 200 years, and we've been working towards it for over 100. You want to know why I entered King Hensel's service, why I made such a decision? I can't allow all that work to go to waste. For over 100 years we've been trying to come to terms with the humans, the halflings, gnomes, us, even the elves. I'm not talking about Rizalkas, nymphs and sylphs. They've always been savages, even when you weren't here. Damn it all, it took 100 years, but somehow or other, we managed to live a common life, next to each other, together. We managed to partially convince humans that we're not so very different.
We're not different at all, Yapin.
The dwarf turned abruptly.
We're not different at all, repeated Ciri. After all, you think and feel like Geralt, and like I do. We eat the same things from the same pot. You help Triss, and so do I. You had a grandmother, and I had a grandmother. My grandmother was killed by the Nilfgaardians in Sintra.
And mine, by the humans, the dwarf said with some effort, in Brugge, during the pogrom.
Riders! Shouted one of Venk's advance guards. Riders ahead!
The commissar trotted up to Yarpin's wagon, and Geralt approached from the other side.
Get in the back, Ciri, he said brusquely. Get off the box and get in the back. Stay with Triss.
I can't see anything from there.
Don't argue, growled Yapin. Settle back there and be quick about it, and hand me the martel. It's under the sheepskin.
This?
Ciri held up a heavy, nasty-looking object, like a hammer, with a sharp, slightly curved hook at its head.
That's it, confirmed the dwarf.
He slipped the handle into the top of his boot and laid the axe on his knees. Venk, seeming calm, watched the highway while sheltering his eyes with his hand.
Light cavalry from Ban Glyn, he surmised after a while. The so-called Dun Banner. I recognize them by their cloaks and beaver hats. Remain calm and stay sharp. Cloaks and beaver hats can be pretty quick to change owners.
The riders approached swiftly. There were about 10 of them. Ciri saw Pauly Dahlberg, in the wagon behind her, place 2 readied crossbows on his knee, and Regan covered them with a cloak. Ciri crept stealthily out from under the canvas, hiding behind Yarpin's broad back. Triss tried to raise herself, swore, and collapsed against her bedding.
Halt! Shouted the first of the riders, no doubt their leader. Who are you? From whence and to where do you ride?
Who asks? Venk calmly pulled himself upright in the saddle. And on whose authority?
King Hensel's army, inquisitive sir. Lance Corporal Zyvik asks, and he's unused to asking twice, so answer at the double. Who are you?
Quartermaster's service of the King's army.
Anyone could climb that. I see no one here bearing the King's colours.
Come closer, Lance Corporal, and examine this ring.
Why flash a ring at me?
The soldier grimaced.
Am I supposed to know every ring or something? Anyone could have a ring like that. Some significant sign.
Yapin Zigrin stood up in the box, raised his axe, and with a swift move, pushed it under the soldier's nose.
And this sign, he snarled,
You know it. Smell it, and remember how it smells.
The Lance Corporal yanked the reins and turned his horse.
Threaten me, do you? He roared. Me? I'm in a king's service.
And so are we, said Venk quietly, and have been for longer than you at that, I'm sure. I warn you, trooper, don't overdo it.
I'm on guard here. How am I to know who you are?
You saw the ring, drawled the commissar. And if you didn't recognize the sign and the jewel, then I wonder who you are. The colours of your unit bear the same emblem, so you ought to know it.
The soldier clearly restrained himself, influenced, no doubt, equally by Venk's calm words and the serious, determined faces peering from the escort's carts.
"Hmm," he said, shifting his fur hat towards his left ear.
"Fine. But if you truly are who you claim to be, you will not, I trust, have anything against my having a look to see what you carry in the wagons."
"We will, indeed," Venk frowned, "and very much at that. Our load is not your business, Lance Corporal. Besides, I do not understand what you think you may find there."
"You do not understand?"
The soldier nodded, lowering his hand towards the hilt of his sword.
"So I shall tell you, sir. Human trafficking is forbidden, and there is no lack of scoundrels selling slaves to the Nilfgaardians. If I find humans in stocks in your wagons, you will not convince me that you are in the king's service, even if you were to show me a dozen rings."
"Fine," said Venk dryly. "If it is slaves you are looking for, then look. You have my permission."
The soldier cantered to the wagon in the middle, leaned over from the saddle and raised the canvas.
"What's in those barrels?"
"What do you expect? Prisoners?" sneered Yannick Brass, sprawled in the coachman's box.
"I'm asking you what's in them, so answer me."
"Salt fish."
"And in those trunks there?"
The warrior rode up to the next wagon and kicked to the side.
"Hooves," snapped Paulie Dahlberg. "And there in the back are buffalo skins."
"So I see."
The Lance Corporal waved his hand, smacked his lips at his horse, rode up to the vanguard, and peered into Yarpen's wagon.
"And who is that woman lying there?"
Triss Merigold smiled weakly, raised herself to her elbow, and traced a short, complicated sign with her hand.
"Who am I?" she asked in a quiet voice. "But you can't see me at all."
The soldier winked nervously, shuddered slightly.
"Saltfish," he said, convinced, lowering the canvas. "All is in order. And his child?"
"Dried mushrooms?" said Ciri,
looking at him impudently. The soldier fell silent, frozen with his mouth open.
"What's that?"
he asked after a while, frowning.
"What?" "Have you concluded your inspection, warrior?"
Venk showed cool interest as he rode up on the other side of the cart. The soldier could barely look away from Ciri's green eyes.
"I have concluded it. Drive on, and may the gods guide you. But be on your guard. 2 days ago, the Skoya Tyre wiped out an entire mounted patrol up by Badger Ravine. It was a strong, large command. And it's true that Badger Ravine is far from here, but elves travel through the forest faster than the wind. We were ordered to round them up, but how'd you catch an elf? It's like trying to catch the wind. Good enough, we're not interested."
The commissar interrupted him brusquely.
"Time presses, and we still have a long journey ahead of us."
"Fare you well, then. Hey, follow me."
"You heard, Geralt," snarled Yarpin Zigrin, watching the patrol ride away. "There are bloody squirrels in the vicinity. I felt it. I've got this tingling feeling in my back all the time, as if some archer was already aiming at me. No, damn it. We can't travel blindly as we've been doing until now, whistling away, dozing and sleepily farting. We have to know what lies ahead of us. Listen, I have an idea."
Ciri pulled her chestnut up sharply, then launched into a gallop, leaning low in the saddle. Geralt, engrossed in conversation with Venk, suddenly sat up straight.
"Don't run wild," he called. "No madness, girl. Do you want to break your neck? And don't go too far!"
She heard no more. She had torn ahead too fiercely. She had done it on purpose, not wanting to listen to the daily cautions. Not too quickly, not too fiercely. Ciri, pa pa, don't go too far, pa pa pa. Be careful, pa pa.
Exactly as if I were a child, she thought. And I'm almost 13, and have a swift chestnut beneath me, and a sharp sword across my back, and I'm not afraid of anything. And it's spring.
Hey, careful, you'll burn your backside.
Yarp and Zigrin, another know-it-all, Pa Pa. Further, further, at a gallop, along the bumpy path, through the green, green grasses and bushes, through the silver puddles,